program? Luce shrugged as the waiters reappeared to clear the plates. His ex-wife had angel lineage, but after the divorce he shifted some of his alliances. Still, Francesca glanced at Stephen, a very good person to know. Oh, hello, Miss Fisher. How nice of you to come.
Yes, hello.
An elderly woman with an affected British accent, a bulky mink coat, and more diamonds around her neck than Luce had ever seen before, extended a white-gloved hand to Stephen, who stood up to greet her. Francesca rose too, leaning forward to greet the woman with a kiss on either cheek.
"Where's my Miles?" the woman asked.
Luce jumped up. "Oh, you must be Miles's grandmother?"
"Good heavens, no," the woman recoiled. "Don't have children, never married, boo-hoo-hoo. I am Miss Ginger Fisher from the Norcal branch of the family tree. Miles is my great-nephew." "And you are?"
"Lucinda Price."
"Lucinda Price, yes."
Miss Fisher looked down her nose at Luce, squinting.
"Read about you in one or another of the histories, though I can't recall what it was exactly that you did."
Before Luce could respond, Stephen's hands were on her shoulders.
"Luce is one of our newest students," he boomed. "You'll be happy to know that Miles has really gone out of his way to make her feel comfortable here."
Miss Fisher's squinty eyes were already looking past them, searching the crowded lawn. The guests had mostly finished eating, and now Shelby was lighting the tiki torches staked into the ground. When the torch closest to the head table grew bright, it illuminated Miles, leaning over the next table to clear away some plates.
"Is that my grandnephew? Waiting tables?"
Miss Fisher pressed a gloved hand to her forehead.
"Actually," Shelby said, butting into the conversation, the torch lighter in one hand. "He's the trash."
"Shelby," Francesca cut her off. "I think that tiki torch near the Nephilim tables has just burned out. Could you fix it? Now?" "You know what?" Luce said to Miss Fisher. "I'll go get Miles and bring him over. You must be eager to catch up." Miles had traded in the Dodgers cap and sweatshirt for a pair of brown tweed slacks and a bright orange button-down shirt. Kind of a bold choice, but it looked good.
"Hey."
He waved her over with the hand that wasn't balancing a stack of dirty plates. Miles didn't seem to mind bussing tables. He was grinning, in his element, chatting with everyone at the banquet as he cleared their plates. When Luce approached, he put the plates down and gave her a big hug, squeezing her closer at the end.
"Are you okay?"
he asked, tilting his head to one side so that his brown hair flopped over his eyes. He didn't seem used to the way his hair moved without his cap on, and he flicked it quickly back.
"You don't look so good. I mean, you look great. That's not what I meant. At all. I really like that dress, and your hair looks pretty. But you also look kind of..."
he frowned.
"Down."
"That's disturbing." Luce kicked the grass with a toe of her black high heel. "Because this is the best I've felt all night."
"Really?"
Miles's face lit up, just long enough for him to take it as a compliment. Then it fell.
"I know it must suck being grounded. If you ask me, Frankie and Stephen are blowing this way out of proportion, keeping you under their thumbs all night."
"I know."
"Don't look now. I'm sure they're watching us."
"Oh, great." He groaned.
"Is that my Aunt Ginger?"
"I just had the pleasure," Luce laughed. "She wants to see you."
"I'm sure she does. Please don't think all my relatives are like her. When you meet the rest of the clan at Thanksgiving..."
Thanksgiving with Miles. Luce had completely forgotten about that.
"Oh." Miles was watching her face. "You don't think Frankie and Stephen are going to make you stay here on Thanksgiving?"
Luce shrugged. "I figured that was what until further notice meant."
"So that's what's making you sad."
He put a hand on Luce's bare shoulder. She'd been regretting the sleeveless dress until now, until his fingers lay across her skin. It was nothing like Daniel's touch, which was electrifying and magical every time, but it was comforting nonetheless. Miles stepped closer, lowering his face to hers.
"What is it?"
She looked up into his dark blue eyes. His hand was still on her shoulder. She felt her lips parting with the truth, or what she knew of the truth, ready to pour out from inside her. That Daniel wasn't who she'd thought he was, which maybe meant she wasn't who she'd thought she was. That everything she'd felt about Daniel at Sword and Cross was still there. It made her dizzy to think about it,
But now everything was also so different, and that everyone kept saying that this lifetime was different, that it was time to break the cycle, but no one could tell her what that meant. That maybe it didn't end with Luce and Daniel together. That maybe she was supposed to shake herself free and do something on her own.
"It's hard to put it all into words," she said finally.
"I know," Miles said. "I have a hard time with that myself. Actually, there's something I've sort of been wanting to tell you."
"Luce!" Francesca was suddenly standing there, practically wedging herself between them. "It's time to go. I'll be escorting you back to your room now."
So much for doing something on her own.
"And Miles, your Aunt Ginger and Stephen would like to see you."
Miles tossed Luce one last sympathetic smile before trudging across the terrace toward his aunt. The tables were clearing out, but Luce could see Arian and Roland cracking up near the bar. A cluster of Nephilim girls crowded around Dawn. Shelby was standing beside a tall boy with bleached blonde hair and pale, almost white skin.
S-A-E-B. It had to be.
He was leaning into Shelby, clearly still interested, but she was clearly still pissed off. So pissed off, she didn't even notice Luce and Francesca walking nearby, but her ex-boyfriend did. His gaze hung on Luce. The pale, not quite blue of his eyes was eerie. Then someone shouted that the after-party was moving down to the beach, and Shelby snagged S.A.E.B.'s attention by turning her back on him, saying he'd better not follow her to the party.
"Do you wish you could join them?" Francesca asked, as they moved further from the commotion of the terrace.
The noise and the wind both quieted as they walked along the gravel path back toward the dorm, passing rows of hot pink bougainvillea. Luce began to wonder whether Francesca was responsible for the overriding tranquility.
"No."
Luce liked all of them well enough, but if she were to attach the word wish to anything right now, it wouldn't be to go to some party on the beach. She would wish... well, she wasn't sure for what. For something having to do with Daniel, that much she knew. But what? That he would tell her what was going on, perhaps? That instead of protecting her by withholding knowledge, he would fill her in on the truth. She still loved Daniel. Of course she did. He knew her better than anyone. Her heart raced every time she saw him. She yearned for him. But how well, really, did she know him? Francesca fixed her eyes on the grass lining the path to the dorm. Very subtly, her arms extended out at either side, like a ballet dancer at the bar. "Not lilies and not roses," she murmured under her breath, as her narrow fingertips started to tremble. What was it, then? There came a soft thrashing sound, like the roots of a plant being pulled from a garden bed, and suddenly, miraculously, a border of moonbeam white flowers sprang up on either side of the path. Thick and lush and a foot tall, these weren't just any flowers. They were rare and delicate wild peonies, with buds as big as baseballs. The flowers Daniel had brought Luce when she was in the hospital, and maybe other times before. Edging the path at shoreline, they shimmered in the night like stars.
"What was that for?" Luce asked.
"For you," Francesca said.
"For what?"
Francesca touched her briefly on the cheek. "Sometimes beautiful things come into our lives out of nowhere. We can't always understand them, but we have to trust in them. I know you want to question everything, but sometimes it pays to just have a little faith." She was talking about Daniel. "You look at me and Stephen," Francesca went on, "and I know we can be confusing. Do I love him? Yes. But when the final battle comes, I'll have to kill him. That's just our reality. We both know exactly where we stand."
"But you don't trust him?"
"I trust him to be true to his nature, which is a demon's. You need to trust that those around you will be true to their natures, even when it may appear that they are betraying who they are."
"What if it's not that easy?"
"You're strong, Luce, independent of anything or anyone else. The way you responded yesterday in my office, I could see it in you. And it made me very... glad." Luce didn't feel strong. She felt foolish. Daniel was an angel, so his true nature had to be good. She was supposed to blindly accept that? And what about her true nature? Not as black and white. Was Luce the reason things between them were so complicated? Long after she'd stepped into her room and closed the door behind her, she couldn't get Francesca's words out of her head.
About an hour later, a knock on the window made Luce jump as she sat staring at the dwindling fire in the hearth. Before she could even get up, there was a second knock on the pane, but this time it sounded more hesitant. Luce rose from the floor and went to the window. What was Daniel doing here again? After making such a huge deal about how unsafe it was to see each other, why did he keep turning up? She didn't even know what Daniel wanted from her, other than to torment her, the way she'd seen him torment those other versions of her in the announcers, or, as he put it, loved so many versions of her. Tonight, all she wanted from him was to be left alone. She flung open the wooden shutters, then pushed up the pane, knocking over yet another one of Shelby's thousand plants. She braced her hands on the sill, then plunged her head into the night, ready to rip into Daniel. But it wasn't Daniel standing on the ledge in the moonlight. It was Miles. He changed out of his fancy clothes, but he left off the Dodgers cap. Most of his body was in shadow, but the outline of his broad shoulders was clear against the deep blue night. His shy smile brought an answering smile to her face. He was holding a gold cornucopia full of orange lilies, plucked from one of the Harvest Fest centerpieces. "Miles," Luce said. The word felt funny in her mouth. It was tinged with pleasant surprise when a moment ago she'd been so prepared to be nasty. Her heartbeat picked up, and she couldn't stop grinning. "How crazy is it that I can walk from the ledge outside my window to yours?" Luce shook her head, stunned too. She'd never even been to Miles's room on the boys' side of the dorm. She didn't even know where it was.
"See?"
His smile broadened. "If you hadn't been grounded, we never would have known. It's really pretty out here, Luce. You should come out. You're not scared of heights or anything." Luce wanted to go out on the ledge with Miles. She just didn't want to be reminded of the time she'd been out there with Daniel. The two of them were so different. Miles, dependable, sweet, concerned. Daniel, the love of her life. If only it were that simple. It seemed unfair and impossible to compare them. "How come you're not at the beach with everyone?" she asked.
"Not everyone's down at the beach."
Miles smiled.
"You're here."
He waved the cornucopia flowers in the air.
"I brought these for you from the dinner. Shelby's got all those plants on her side of the room. I thought you could put these on your desk."
Miles shoved the wicker horn through the window at her. It was brimming with the glossy orange flowers. Their black stamens shivered in the wind. They weren't perfect, a few were even wilting, but they were so much lovelier than the larger-than-life peonies Francesca had made bloom. Sometimes, beautiful things come into our lives out of nowhere. This was maybe the nicest thing anyone had done for her at Shoreline, up there with the time Miles had broken into Stephen's office to steal the book, so he could help Luce learn how to step through a shadow, or the time Miles had invited her to have breakfast the very first day he met her, or how quick Miles had been to include her in his Thanksgiving plans, or the utter absence of resentment on Miles's face when he'd been assigned garbage duty after she'd gotten him in trouble for sneaking out. Or the way Miles... She could go on, she realized, all night. She carried the flowers across the room and set them on her desk. When she came back, Miles was holding out a hand for her to step through the window. She could make up an excuse, something lame about not breaking Francesca's rules. Or she could just take his hand, warm and strong and safe, and let herself glide through. She could forget Daniel for just a moment. Outside, the sky was an explosion of stars. They glittered in the black night like Miss Fisher's diamonds, but clearer, brighter, even more beautiful. From here, the redwood canopy east of the school looked dense and dark and foreboding. To the west were the ceaselessly churning water and the distant glow of the bonfire blazing down on the blustery beach. Luce had noticed these things before from the ledge. Ocean, forest, sky. But all the other times she'd been out here, Daniel had consumed her focus, almost blinded her to the point where she'd never really taken in the scene. It truly was breathtaking.
"You're probably wondering why I came over," Miles said, which made Luce realize they'd both been silent for a while. "I started to tell you this earlier, but I didn't... I'm not sure."
"I'm glad you came by. It was getting a little boring in there, staring at the fire." She gave him half a smile. Miles stuffed his hands in his pockets.
"Look, I know you and Daniel."
Luce involuntarily groaned.
"You're right, I shouldn't even bring this up."
No, that wasn't why I groaned. It's just, you know I like you, right?
Of course Miles liked her. They were friends, good friends. Luce chewed her lip. Now she was playing dumb with herself, which was never a good sign. The truth, Miles liked her, and she liked him, too. Look at the guy, with his ocean blue eyes and the little chuckle he gave every time he broke into a smile. Plus, he was hands down the nicest person she had ever met. But there was Daniel, and before him there'd been Daniel, too, and Daniel again, and again, and it was endlessly complicated.
I'm botching this, Miles winced, when all I really wanted to do was say goodnight.
She looked up at him and found that he was looking down at her. His hands came out of his pockets, found her hands, and clasped them in the space between their chests. He leaned down slowly, deliberately, giving Luce another chance to feel the spectacular night all around them. She knew that Miles was going to kiss her. She knew she shouldn't let him. Because of Daniel, of course, but also because of what had happened when she'd kissed Trevor. Her first kiss. The only kiss she'd ever had with anyone besides Daniel. Could being tied to Daniel be the reason Trevor died? What if the second she kissed Miles, he... She couldn't even bear to think about it.
Miles, she pressed him back. You shouldn't do this. Kissing me is...
She swallowed.
Dangerous.
He chuckled. Of course he would, because he didn't know anything about Trevor.
I think I'll take my chances.
She tried to pull back, but Miles had a way of making her feel good about almost everything. Even this. When his mouth came down on hers, she held her breath, waiting for the worst. But nothing happened. Miles' lips were feather soft, kissing her gently enough that he still felt like her good friend, but with just enough passion to prove there was more where this one came from, if she wanted it. But even if there were no flames, no scorched skin, no death or destruction, and why weren't there? The kiss was still supposed to feel wrong. For so long, all her lips had wanted were Daniel's lips, all the time. She used to dream about his kiss, his smile, his gorgeous violet eyes, his body holding hers. There was never supposed to be anyone else. What if she'd been wrong about Daniel? What if she could be happier, or happy, period, with another guy? Miles pulled away, looking happy and sad at the same time.
So, good night.
He turned away, almost like he was going to bolt back toward his room. But then he turned back and took her hand.
If you ever feel like things aren't working out, you know, with...
He looked up at the sky.
I'm here. Just wanted you to know.
Luce nodded, already battling a rolling wave of confusion. Miles squeezed her hand, then took off in the other direction, bounding over the sloping, shingled roof, back toward his side of the dorm. Alone, she traced her lips where Miles's had just been. The next time she saw Daniel, would he be able to tell? Her head hurt from all the ups and downs of the day, and she wanted to crawl into bed. As she slipped back through the window into her room, she turned one last time to take in the view, to remember how everything had looked on the night when so many things had changed. But instead of the stars and trees and crashing waves, Luce's eyes fixed on something else behind one of the roof's many chimneys, something white and billowing, an iridescent pair of wings. Daniel. Crouched, only half hidden from view, just feet away from where she and Miles had kissed. His back was to her. His head was hanging.
Daniel, she called out, feeling her voice catch on his name.
When he turned to face her, the drawn look on his face was one of absolute agony, as if Luce had just ripped his heart out. He bent his knees, unfurled his wings, and took off into the night. A moment later, he looked like just another star in the sparkling black sky. 16. 3 days. At breakfast the next morning, Luce could hardly eat anything. It was the last day of classes before Shoreline dismissed the students for Thanksgiving break, and Luce was already feeling lonely. Loneliness in a crowd of people was the worst kind of loneliness, but she couldn't help it. All the students around her were chattering happily about going home to their families, about the girl or guy they hadn't seen since summer break, about the parties their best friends were throwing over the weekend. The only party Luce was going to this weekend was the pity party in her empty dorm room. Of course, a few other students from the main school were staying put over the break. Connor Madsen, who'd come to Shoreline from an orphanage in Minnesota. Brenna Lee, whose parents lived in China. Francesca and Stephen were staying, too. Surprise, surprise. And were hosting a Thanksgiving dinner for the displaced in the mess hall Thursday night. Luce was holding out one hope, that Arian's threat to keep an eye on her included Thanksgiving break. Then again, she'd barely seen the girl since Arian had taken the three of them back to Shoreline. Only for that brief moment at Harvest Fest. Everyone else was checking out in the next day or two. Miles to his family's 100-plus person catered event. Dawn and Jasmine to their family's joint gathering at Jasmine's Sausalito Mansion. Even Shelby, though she hadn't said a word to Luce about going back to Bakersfield, had been on the phone with her mom the day before, groaning, "Yes, I know. I'll be there." It was the worst possible time for Luce to be left alone. The stew of her inner turmoil grew thicker every day, until she didn't know how to feel about Daniel or anyone else, and she couldn't stop cursing herself for how stupid she'd been the night before, letting Miles go so far. All night long, she kept arriving at the same conclusion. Even though she was upset with Daniel, what had happened with Miles wasn't anyone's fault but hers. She was the one who cheated. It made her physically ill to think of Daniel sitting out there, watching, saying nothing as she and Miles kissed, to imagine how he must have felt when he took off from her roof. The way she'd felt when she first heard about whatever had happened between Daniel and Shelby. Only worse, because this was bona fide cheating. One more thing to add to the list of proofs that she and Daniel could not seem to communicate. A soft laugh brought her back to her uneaten breakfast. Francesca was gliding around the tables in a long black-and-white polka-dotted cape. Every time Luce glanced over at her, she had that saccharine smile stuck on her face and was deep in conversation with one student or another. But Luce still felt under heavy scrutiny, as if Francesca could bore into Luce's mind and know exactly what had made Luce lose her appetite. Like the wild white peonies that had disappeared without a trace from their border overnight, so too could Francesca's belief disappear that Luce was strong. "Why so glum, chum?" Shelby swallowed a large wedge of bagel. "Believe me, you didn't miss that much last night." Luce didn't answer. The bonfire on the beach was the furthest thing from her mind. She just noticed Miles trudging to breakfast much later than he usually did. His Dodger's cap was tugged low over his eyes, and his shoulders looked a little stooped. Involuntarily, her fingers went to her lips. Shelby was waving flamboyantly, both arms over her head. "What is he, blind? Earth to Miles!" When she finally caught his attention, Miles gave their table a clumsy wave, practically tripping over the to-go buffet. He waved again, then disappeared behind the mess hall. "Is it me, or has Miles been acting like a total spaz recently?" Shelby rolled her eyes and imitated Miles's goofy stumble. But Luce was dying to stumble after him and... And what? Tell him not to feel embarrassed? That the kiss had been her fault, too? That having a crush on a train wreck like her was only going to end badly? That she liked him, but so many things about it, them, were impossible? That even though she and Daniel were fighting right now, nothing could ever really threaten their love? "Anyway, like I was saying," Shelby continued, refilling Luce's coffee from the bronze carafe on the table. "Bonfire, hedonism, blah, blah, blah. These things can be so tedious." One side of Shelby's mouth flinched to an almost smile. "Especially, you know, when you're not around." Luce's heart unclenched just a little. Every once in a while, Shelby let in the tiniest ray of light. But then her roommate quickly shrugged as if to say, "Don't let it go to your head." "No one else appreciates my Lilith impersonation. That's all." Shelby straightened her spine, heaved her chest forward, and made the right side of her top lip quiver disapprovingly. Shelby's Lilith impersonation had never failed to crack Luce up. But today, all she could manage was a thin, closed-mouthed smile. Shelby said. "Not that you'd care what you missed at the party. I noticed Daniel flying away over the beach last night. You two must have had a lot to catch up on." Shelby had seen Daniel? Why hadn't she mentioned it sooner? Could anyone else have seen him? "We didn't even talk." "That's hard to believe. He's usually so full of orders to give you." "Shelby, Miles kissed me," Luce interrupted. Her eyes were closed. For some reason, that made it easier to confess. Last night, and Daniel saw everything. He took off before I could...
Yeah, that would do it.
Shelby let out a low whistle. This is kind of huge. Lucy's face burned with shame. Her mind couldn't shake the image of Daniel taking flight. It felt so final.
So, is it, you know, over between you and Daniel?
No, never. Luce couldn't even hear that phrase without shuddering. I just don't know.
She hadn't told Shelby the rest of what she'd glimpsed in the announcer, that Daniel and Cam were working together, were secret pals, as far as she could tell.
Shelby wouldn't know who Cam was anyway, and the history was way too complicated to explain. Besides, Luce wouldn't be able to stand it if Shelby, with her oh-so-deliberately controversial views about angels and demons, tried to make a case that a partnership between Daniel and Cam wasn't that big a deal.
You know Daniel's gonna be all screwed up over it right now. Isn't that Daniel's big thing, the undying devotion you two share?
Luce stiffened in her white iron chair.
I wasn't being sarcastic, Luce. So maybe, I don't know, Daniel's been involved with other people. It's all pretty nebulous. The take-home message, like I said before, is that there was never a question in his mind that you were the only one that mattered.
That's supposed to make me feel better?
I don't claim to be in the business of making you feel better. I'm just trying to illustrate a point. For all Daniel's annoying aloofness, and there's plenty of it, the guy's clearly devoted. The real question here is, are you? As far as Daniel knows, you could drop him as soon as someone else comes along. Miles has come along, and he's obviously a great guy. A little sappy for my taste, but...
I would never drop Daniel, Lou said aloud, desperately wanting to believe it. She thought about the horror on his face the night they'd argued on the beach. She was stunned when he'd been so quick to ask, "Are we breaking up?" Like he suspected that was a possibility. Like she hadn't swallowed whole his entire insane story about their endless love when he told her under the peach trees at Sword and Cross. She had swallowed it in one single believing gulp, ingesting all its fissures, too, the jagged pieces that made no sense but begged her to believe them at the time. Now, every day, another of them gnawed at her insides. She could feel the biggest one rising up in her throat.
Most of the time, I don't even know why he likes me.
Come on, Shelby groaned. Do not be one of those girls. He's too good for me. Wah, wah, wah. I'll have to punch you over to Dawn and Jasmine's table. That's their expertise, not mine.
I don't mean it like that. Luce leaned in and dropped her voice. I mean, ages ago, when Daniel was, you know, up there, he chose me. Me, out of everyone else on Earth.
Well, there were probably a lot fewer options back then.
Ouch!
Luce had swatted her. Just trying to lighten the mood.
He chose me, Shelby, over some big role in heaven, over some elevated position. That's pretty major, don't you think?
Shelby nodded. There had to be more to it than just him thinking I was cute.
But you don't know what it was?
I've asked, but he's never told me what happened. When I brought it up, it was almost like Daniel couldn't remember. And that's crazy, because it means we're both just going through the motions. Based on thousands of years of some fairy tale, neither one of us can even back up.
Shelby rubbed her jaw.
What else is Daniel keeping from you?
That's what I plan on finding out.
Around the terrace, time had marched on. Most of the students were heading to class. The scholarship waiters were hurrying to bus the plates. At a table closest to the ocean, Stephen was drinking coffee alone. His glasses were folded up and resting on the table. His eyes found Luce's, and he held her gaze for a long time, so long that, even after she stood up to go to class, his intense, watchful expression stuck with her, which was probably his point. After the longest, most mind-numbing PBS special on cell division ever seen, Luce walked out of her biology class, down the stairs of the main school building, and outside, where she was surprised to see the parking lot completely packed. Parents, older siblings, and more than a few chauffeurs formed one long line of vehicles, the likes of which Luce hadn't seen since the carpool lane at her middle school in Georgia. Around her, students hurried out of class and zigzagged toward the cars, wheeling suitcases in their wake. Dawn and Jasmine hugged goodbye, before Jasmine got into a town car and Don's brothers made room for her in the back of an SUV. The two of them were only splitting up for a few hours. Luce ducked back into the building and slipped out the rarely used rear door to trek across the grounds to her dorm. She definitely could not deal with goodbyes right now. Walking under the gray sky, Luce was still a guilty wreck, but a conversation with Shelby had left her feeling a bit more in control. It was screwed up, she knew it, but having kissed someone else made her feel like she finally had a say in her relationship with Daniel. Maybe she'd get a reaction out of him for a change. She could apologize. He could apologize. They could make lemonade, or whatever. Break through all this crap and really start talking. Just then her phone buzzed. A text from Mr. Cole. Everything's taken care of. So Mr. Cole had passed on the news that Luce wasn't coming home. But he'd conveniently left out of his text whether or not her parents were still speaking to her. She hadn't heard from them in days. It was a no-win situation. If they wrote to her, she felt guilty about not writing them back. If they didn't write to her, she felt responsible for being the reason they couldn't reach out. She still hadn't figured out what to do about Callie. She thumped up the stairs of the empty dorm. Each step echoed hollowly in the cavernous building. No one was around. When she made it to her room, she expected to find Shelby already gone, or at least to see her suitcase packed and waiting by the door. Shelby wasn't there, but her clothes were still strewn all over her side of the room. Her puffy red vest was still on its peg, and her yoga gear was still stacked in the corner. Maybe she wasn't leaving until tomorrow morning. Before Luce had even fully closed the door behind her, someone knocked on the other side. She stuck her head into the hallway. Miles. Her palms grew damp, and she could feel her heartbeat pick up. She wondered what her hair looked like, whether she'd remembered to make her bed this morning, and how long he'd been walking behind her. Whether he'd seen her dodge the caravan of Thanksgiving farewells, or seen the pained look on her face when she checked her text messages. Hi, she said softly.
Hi.
Miles had on a thick brown sweater over a collared white shirt. He was wearing those jeans with a hole in the knee, the ones that always made Dawn jump up to follow him so she and Jasmine could swoon from behind him. Miles's mouth twitched into a nervous smile.
Want to do something?
His thumbs were tucked under the straps of his navy blue backpack, and his voice echoed off the wood walls. It crossed Luce's mind that she and Miles might be the only two people in the entire building. The thought was both thrilling and nerve-wracking. I'm grounded for eternity, remember?
That's why I brought the fun to you.
At first, Luce thought Miles was referring to himself, but then he slid his backpack off one shoulder and unzipped the main compartment. Inside was a treasure trove of board games, Boggle, Connect Four, Parcheesi, the high school musical game, even Travel Scrabble. It was so nice and so not awkward, Luce thought she might cry. I figured you were going home today, she said. Everyone else is leaving. Miles shrugged.
My parents said it was cool if I stayed. I'll be home again in a couple of weeks, and besides, we have different opinions on the perfect vacation. Theirs is anything worthy of a write-up in the New York Times style section.
Luce laughed. And yours? Miles dug a little deeper into his bag, pulling out two packets of instant apple cider, a box of microwave popcorn, and a DVD of the Woody Allen movie Hannah and Her Sisters.
Pretty humble, but you're looking at it.
He smiled.
I asked you to spend Thanksgiving with me, Luce. Just because we're changing venues doesn't mean we have to change our plans.
She felt a grin spread across her face and held open the door for Miles to come in. His shoulder brushed hers when he passed, and they locked eyes for a moment. She felt Miles almost sway on his heels as if he was going to double back and kiss her. She tensed up, waiting. But he just smiled, dropped his backpack in the middle of the floor, and started to unload Thanksgiving.
"Are you hungry?" he asked, waving a packet of popcorn.
Luce winced.
"I am really bad at making popcorn."
She was thinking of the time she and Callie nearly burned down their dorm at Dover. She couldn't help it. It made her miss her best friend all over again. Miles opened the door of the microwave. He held up a finger.
I can press any button with this finger and microwave almost anything. You're lucky I'm so good at it.
It was weird that earlier she'd been torn up over kissing Miles. Now, she realized, he was the only thing making her feel better.
If he hadn't come over, she'd be spiraling into another guilty black abyss. Even though she couldn't imagine kissing him again, not because she didn't want to, necessarily, but because she knew it wasn't right, that she couldn't do that to Daniel, that she didn't want to do that to Daniel, Miles's presence was extremely comforting. They played Boggle until Luce finally understood the rules, Scrabble until they realized the set was missing half its letters, and Parcheesi until the sun went down outside the window, and it was too dim to see the board without turning on a light. Then Miles stood up and lit the fire and slid Hannah and her sisters into the DVD player on Luce's computer. The only place to sit and watch the movie was on the bed. Suddenly, Luce felt nervous. Before, they'd just been two friends playing board games on a weekday afternoon. Now the stars were out, the dorm was empty, the fire was crackling, and what did that make them? They sat next to each other on Luce's bed, and she couldn't stop thinking about where her hands were, whether they looked unnatural if she kept them pinned across her lap, whether they'd brush against Miles's fingertips if she rested them at her sides. Out of the corner of her eye, she could see his chest moving when he breathed. She could hear him scratch the back of his neck. He'd taken his baseball cap off, and she could smell the citrusy shampoo in his fine brown hair. Hannah and her sisters was one of the few Woody Allen movies she'd never seen, but she could not make herself pay attention. She'd crossed and uncrossed her legs three times before the opening titles rolled. The door swung open. Shelby barreled into the room, took one look at Luce's computer monitor, and blurted, "Best Thanksgiving movie ever. Can I watch with..." Then she looked at Luce and Miles, sitting in the dark on the bed. "Oh." Luce bolted up off the bed. "Of course you can. I didn't know when you were leaving to go home." "Never." Shelby flung herself on the top bunk, sending a small earthquake down to Luce and Miles on the bottom bunk. "My mom and I got in a fight. Don't ask, it was utterly boring. Besides, I'd much rather hang out with you guys anyway." "But Shelby..." Luce couldn't imagine getting in a fight so big it kept her from going home on Thanksgiving. "Let's just enjoy the genius of Woody in silence," Shelby commanded. Miles and Luce shot each other a conspiratorial look. "You got it," Miles called up to Shelby, giving Luce a grin. Truthfully, Luce was relieved. When she settled back into her seat, her fingers did brush against Miles's, and he gave them a squeeze. It was only for a moment, but it was long enough to let Luce know that, at least as far as Thanksgiving weekend was concerned, things were going to be okay. 17. 2 days. Luce woke to the scrape of a hanger dragging across the bar in her closet. Before she could see who was responsible for the noise, a mound of clothes bombarded her. She sat up in bed, pushing her way out from under the pile of jeans, t-shirts, and sweaters. She plucked an argyle sock off her forehead. "Arian? Do you like the red one, or the black?" Arian was holding two of Luce's dresses up against her tiny frame, swaying as she modeled each one. Arian's arms were bare of the awful tracking wristband she'd had to wear at Sword and Cross. Luce hadn't noticed until now, and she shuddered to remember the cruel voltage sent coursing through Arian whenever she stepped out of line. Every day in California, Luce's memories of Sword and Cross grew hazier, until a moment like this one jolted her back into the turmoil of her stay there. "Elizabeth Taylor says only certain women can wear red," Arian continued. "It's all about cleavage and coloring. Luckily, you've got both." She freed the red dress from its hanger and tossed it on the pile. "What are you doing here?" Luce asked. Arian put her tiny hands on her hips. "Helping you pack, silly. You're going home." "What home? What do you mean?" Luce stammered. Arian laughed, stepping forward to take one of Luce's hands and tug her out of bed. "Georgia, my peach." She patted Luce's cheek. "With good old Harry and Doreen, and apparently some friend of yours is also flying in." Callie. She was actually going to get to see Callie? And her parents? Luce wobbled where she stood, suddenly speechless. "Don't you want to spend Thanksgiving with your fam?" Luce was waiting for the catch. "What about..." "Don't worry," Arian tweaked Luce's nose. "It was Mr. Cole's idea. We've got to keep up the ruse that you're still just down the road from your parents. This seemed the simplest and most fun way to go about it." "But when he texted me yesterday,
All he said was, he didn't want to get your hopes up until he had every little thing taken care of, including, Arian curtsied, the perfect escort. One of them, anyway. Roland should be here any second. A knock on the door. He's so good. Arian pointed to the red dress still in Luce's hand. Throw that baby on. Luce quickly shimmied into the dress, then ducked into the bathroom to brush her teeth and hair. Arian had presented her with one of those rare, jump, how high, situations. You didn't bother with questions. You just leaped. She emerged from the bathroom, expecting to see Roland and Arian doing something Roland and Arian ask, like one of them standing on top of her suitcase while the other tried to zip it up. But it wasn't Roland who had knocked. It was Stephen and Francesca. Shit. The words, I can explain, formed on the tip of Luce's tongue. Only she had no idea how to talk herself out of this situation. She looked to Arian for help. Arian was still tossing Luce's sneakers into the suitcase. Didn't she know the kind of major trouble they were about to be in? When Francesca stepped forward, Luce braced herself. But then the wide bell sleeves of Francesca's crimson turtleneck engulfed Luce in an unexpected hug. We came to wish you well. Of course, we'll miss you tomorrow, and what we, with tongue-in-cheek, refer to as the dinner for the displaced, Stephen said, taking Francesca's hand and prying her away from Luce. But it's always best for a student to be with family. I don't understand, Luce said. You knew about this? I thought I was grounded until further notice. We spoke with Mr. Cole this morning, Francesca said. And you weren't grounded as punishment, Luce, Stephen explained. It was the only way we could ensure you'd be safe under our charge, but you're in good hands with Arian. Never one to overstay her welcome, Francesca was already steering Stephen toward the door. We hear your parents are anxious to see you. Something about your mother filling up a freezer with pies. She winked at Luce, and both she and Stephen waved, and then they were gone. Luce's heart swelled at the prospect of getting home to her family. But not before it went out to Miles and Shelby. They'd be crestfallen if she went home to Thunderbolt and abandoned them here. She didn't even know where Shelby was. She couldn't leave without... Roland stuck his head through Luce's open door. He looked professional in his pinstriped blazer and crisp white-colored shirt. His black and gold dreads were shorter, spikier, making his dark, deep-set eyes even more striking. Is the coast clear? He asked, shooting Luce his familiar, devilish grin. We've got a hanger on. He nodded at someone behind him, who appeared a moment later with duffel bag in hand. Miles. He flashed Luce a wonderfully unembarrassed grin and took a seat on the edge of her bed. An image of introducing him to her parents ran through Luce's mind. He'd take off his baseball cap, shake both of their hands, compliment her mom's half-finished needlepoint. Roland, what part of top-secret mission don't you understand? Arian asked. It's my fault, Miles admitted. I saw Roland heading over here, and I forced it out of him. That's why he's late. As soon as this guy heard the words Luce and Georgia, Roland jerked his thumb at Miles. It took him about a nanosecond to pack. We kind of had a Thanksgiving deal, Miles said, looking only at Luce. I couldn't let her break it. No, Luce bit back a smile. He couldn't. Mm-hmm, Arian raised an eyebrow. I just wonder what Francesca would have to say about this, whether someone should run it by your parents first, Miles. Ah, come on, Arian. Roland waved his hand dismissively. Since when do you check in with authority? I'll look out for the kid. He won't get into any trouble. Get into any trouble where? Shelby barged into the room, her yoga mat swinging from a string across her back. Where are we going? Luce's house in Georgia for Thanksgiving, Miles said. In the hallway behind Shelby, a bleached blonde head hovered, Shelby's ex-boyfriend. His skin was ghost white, and Shelby was right. There was something odd about his eyes, how pale they were. For the last time I said goodbye, Phil. Shelby quickly shut the door in his face. Who was that? Roland asked. My skis and a half ex-boyfriend. Seems like an interesting guy, Roland said, staring at the door, distracted. Interesting? Shelby snorted. A restraining order would be interesting. She took one look at Luce's suitcase, then at Miles's duffel, then haphazardly started throwing her belongings into a squat black trunk.
Arian threw up her hands.
"Can't you do anything without an entourage?" she asked Luce.
Then, turning to Roland,
"I assume you want to take responsibility for this one, too."
"That's the holiday spirit," Roland laughed. "We're going to the Prices for Thanksgiving," he told Shelby, whose face lit up. "The more, the merrier."
Luce couldn't believe how perfectly everything was working out. Thanksgiving with her family, and Callie, and Arian and Roland, and Shelby and Miles. She couldn't have scripted this any better. Only one thing nagged at her, and it seriously nagged.
"What about Daniel?"
She meant, does he know about this trip already? And what's the real story between him and Cam? And is he still mad at me about that kiss? And is it wrong that Miles is coming too? And also, what are the odds of Daniel showing up at my parents' house tomorrow, even though he says he can't see me?
Arian cleared her throat.
"Yes, what about Daniel?" she repeated quietly. "Time will tell."
"So, do we have plane tickets or something?" Shelby asked.
"Because if we're flying, I need to pack my Serenity kit, essential oils, and heating pad. You don't want to see me at 35,000 feet without them."
Roland snapped his fingers. Near his feet, the shadow cast by the open door peeled itself off the hardwood planks, rising the way a trap door might lead down to a basement. A gust of cold swept up from the floor, followed by a bleak blast of darkness. It smelled like wet hay as it shrank into a small, compact sphere. But then, at a nod from Roland, it ballooned into a tall, black portal. It looked like the sort of door that would lead to a restaurant kitchen, the swinging kind, with a round glass window in the top. Only this one was made out of dark announcer fog, and all that was visible through the window was a darker, swirling blackness.
"That looks just like the one I read about in the book," Miles said, clearly impressed. "All I could manage was a weird sort of trapezoidal window."
He smiled at Luce.
"But we still made it work." "Stick with me, kid," Roland said, "and you'll see what it's like to travel in style."
Arian rolled her eyes.
"He's such a show-off."
Luce cocked her head at Arian.
"But I thought you said..."
"I know." Arian put up a hand.
"I know I repeated that whole spiel about how dangerous announcer travel is, and I don't want to be one of those sucky, do as I say, not as I do angels. But we all agreed, Francesca and Stephen, Mr. Cole, everyone..."
"Everyone?" Luce couldn't group them together without seeing a glaring missing piece. Where was Daniel in all of this?
"Besides," Arian smiled proudly, "we're in the presence of a master. Rose, one of the very best announcer travelers." And then in a whispered aside to Roland, "Don't let it go to your head." Roland swung open the announcer's door. It groaned and creaked on shadow hinges and swung open onto a dank, yawning pit of emptiness.
What is it again that makes traveling by announcer so dangerous?" Miles asked.
Arian pointed around the room at the shadow under the desk lamp behind Shelby's yoga mat. All of the shadows were quivering.
"An untrained eye might not know which announcer to step through. And believe us, there are always uninvited lurkers waiting for someone to accidentally open them."
Luce remembered the sickly brown shadow she'd tripped over. The uninvited lurker that had given her the nightmarish glimpse of Cam and Daniel on the beach.
"If you pick the wrong announcer, it's very easy to get lost," Roland explained. "To not have any idea where or when you're stepping through to. But as long as you stick with us, you don't have anything to worry about."
Nervously, Luce pointed into the belly of the announcer. She didn't remember the other shadows they'd stepped through, looking quite so murky and dark. Or maybe she just hadn't known the consequences until now.
"We're not just going to pop up in the middle of my parents' kitchen, are we? Because I think my mom might pass out from the shock."
"Please!" Arian clucked her tongue, guiding Luce, then Miles, and then Shelby, to stand before the announcer.
"Have a little faith."
It was like pushing through a murky, wet fog, clammy and unpleasant. It slid and coiled over Luce's skin and stuck in her lungs when she breathed. An echo of ceaseless white noise filled up the tunnel like a waterfall. The two other times Luce had traveled by announcer, she felt lumbering and hurried, catapulting through darkness to come out somewhere light. This was different. She'd lost track of where and when she was, even of who she was and where she was going. Then there was a strong hand yanking her out. When Roland let her go, the echoing waterfall trickled to a drip, and a whiff of chlorine filled her nose. A diving board. A familiar one, under a lofty arch ceiling lined with broken stained glass panels. The sun had passed over the high windows, but its light still cast faint-colored prisms onto the surface of an Olympic-sized pool. Along the walls, candles flickered in stone recesses, throwing off a dim, useless light. She'd recognize this church gymnasium anywhere. "Oh, my God," Luce whispered. "We're back at Sword and Cross." Arian scanned the room quickly and without affection. "As far as your parents are concerned when they pick us up tomorrow morning, you've been here all along. Got it?" Arian acted as if returning to Sword and Cross for the night was no different than checking into a nondescript motel. The jolt back to this part of her life, however, hit Luce like a slap across the face. She hadn't liked it here. Sword and Cross was a miserable place, but it was a place where things had happened to her. She'd fallen in love here, had watched a close friend die. More than anywhere else, this was a place where she had changed. She closed her eyes and laughed bitterly. She'd known nothing then, compared to what she knew now. And yet she'd felt surer of herself and her emotions than she could imagine ever feeling again. "What the hell is this place?" Shelby asked. "My last school," Luce said, glancing at Miles. He seemed uneasy, huddling next to Shelby against the wall. Luce remembered. They were good kids, and though she'd never talked much about her time here, the Nephilim rumor mill could easily have filled their minds with enough vivid details to paint one scary night at Sword and Cross. "Ahem," Arian said, looking at Shelby and Miles. "And when Luce's parents ask, you guys go here too." "Explain to me how this is a school," Shelby said. "What, do you swim and pray at the same time? That's a level of freakish efficiency you'd never see on the West Coast. I think I just got homesick." "You think this is bad," Luce said. "You should see the rest of campus." Shelby scrunched up her face, and Luce couldn't blame her. Compared to Shoreline, this place was a gruesome sort of purgatory. At least, unlike the rest of the kids here, they'd be gone after tonight. "You guys look drained," Arian said. "Which is good, because I promised Cole we'd lie low." Roland had been leaning against the diving board, rubbing his temples, the announcer's shards quivering at his feet. Now he stood up and began to take charge. "Miles, you're going to bunk up with me in my old room. And, Luce, your room's still empty. We'll roll in a cot for Shelby. Let's all drop our bags and meet back in my room. I'll use the old black market network to order a pizza." The mention of pizza was enough to shake Miles and Shelby out of their comas, but Luce was taking longer to adjust. It wasn't that weird for her room to still be empty. Counting on her fingers, she realized she'd been gone from this place less than 3 weeks. It felt like so much longer, like every day had been a month, and it was impossible for Luce to imagine Sword and Cross without any of the people, or angels, or demons, who'd made up her life here. "Don't worry," Arian stood next to Luce. "This place is like a reject revolving door. People come and go all the time because of some parole issue, crazy parents, whatever. Randy's off tonight. No one else gives a damn. If anyone gives you a second look, just give them a third one. Or send them over to me." She made a fist. "You ready to get out of here?" She pointed at the others, already following Roland out the door. "I'll catch up with you guys," Luce said. "There's something I need to do first." In the far east corner of the cemetery, next to her father's plot, Penn's grave was modest but neat. The last time Luce had seen the cemetery, it had been coated in a thick felt of dust. The aftermath of every angel battle, Daniel had told her. Luce didn't know whether the wind had carried the dust away by now, or whether angel dust just disappeared over time, but the cemetery seemed to be back to its neglected old self, still ringed by an ever-advancing forest of kudzu-strangled live oaks, still barren and depleted under the no-color sky. Only there was something missing, something vital Luce couldn't put her finger on, but that still made her feel lonely. A sparse layer of dull green grass had grown up and around Penn's grave, so it didn't look so jarringly new compared to the centuries-old grave surrounding it. A bouquet of fresh lilies lay in front of the simple gray tombstone, which Luce stooped down to read. Pennyweather Van Sickle Lockwood, a dear friend, 1991
to 2009. Luce inhaled a jagged breath, and tears sprang to her eyes. She'd left Sword and Cross before there'd been time to bury Penn, but Daniel had taken care of everything. It was the first time in several days that her heart ached for him, because he had known, better than she would have known herself, exactly how Penn's tombstone should read. Luce knelt down on the grass, her tears flowing freely now, her hands combing the grass uselessly. "I'm here, Penn," she whispered. "I'm sorry I had to leave you. I'm sorry you got mixed up with me in the first place. You deserved better than this, a better friend than me." She wished her friend were still here. She wished she could talk to her. She knew Penn's death was her fault, and it almost broke her heart. "I don't know what I'm doing anymore, and I'm scared." She wanted to say she missed Penn all the time, but what she really missed was the idea of a friend she could have known better if death hadn't taken her away too soon. None of it was right.
"Hello, Luce."
She had to wipe away the tears before she could see Mr. Cole standing on the other side of Penn's grave. She'd gotten so used to her crisply elegant teachers at Shoreline that Mr. Cole looked almost frumpy in his bunched-up tawny suit with his mustache and his brown hair parted straight as a ruler just above his left ear. Luce scrambled to her feet, sniffling against her wrist. "Hi, Mr. Cole." He smiled kindly.
"You're doing well over there, I hear. Everyone says you're doing very well."
"Oh, no," she stammered. "I don't know about that."
"Well, I do. I also know your parents are very happy to get to see you. It's good when these things can work out."
"Thank you," she said, hoping he understood how grateful she was.
"I won't keep you, but for just one question."
Luce waited for him to ask her about something deep and dark and over her head, about Daniel and Cam, good and evil, right and wrong, trust and deceit. But all he said was,
"What did you do to your hair?"
Luce's head was upside down in the sink in the girls' bathroom, down the hall from the Sword and Cross cafeteria. Shelby carried in the last two slices of cheese pizza, stacked on a paper plate for Luce. Arian held out a bottle of cheap black hair dye, the best Roland could do on such short notice, but not a bad match for Luce's natural color. Neither Arian nor Shelby had questioned Luce about her sudden need for a change. She'd been grateful for that. Now, she saw, they'd only been waiting for her to be in a vulnerable, half-dyed position to begin their inquisition. "I guess Daniel will be pleased," Arian said in her coyest, leading question tone of voice. "Not that you're doing this for Daniel."
"Are you?"
"Arian," Luce warned. She wasn't going there. Not tonight. But Shelby seemed to want to.
"You know what I've always liked about Miles? That he likes you for who you are, not for what you do with your hair."
"If you two were going to be that obvious about it, why didn't you guys come down in your Team Daniel and Team Miles t-shirts?"
"We should order those," Shelby said.
"Mine's in the laundry," Arian said. Luce tuned them out, focusing instead on the warm water and the strange confluence of things flowing over her head, into her scalp, and down the drain. Shelby's stubby fingers had helped with Luce's first dye job, back when Luce thought that was the only way to start afresh. Arian's first act of friendship toward Luce had been the command to chop off her black hair, to make her look like Luce. Now, their hands worked through Luce's scalp, in the same bathroom where Penn had rinsed her clean of the meatloaf Molly had dumped on her head, her first day at Sword and Cross. It was bittersweet and beautiful, and Luce couldn't figure out what any of it meant, only that she didn't want to hide anymore, not from herself or from her parents, not from Daniel, or even from those who sought to harm her. She'd been seeking a cheap transformation when she first got out to California. Now she realized that the only worthwhile way to make a change was to earn a real one. Dyeing her hair black wasn't the answer either. She knew she wasn't there yet, but at least it was a step in the right direction. Arian and Shelby stopped arguing over which guy was Luce's soulmate. They looked at her silently and nodded. She felt it before she even saw her reflection in the mirror. The heavy weight of melancholy, one she hadn't even known she was shouldering, had lifted from her body. She was back to her roots. She was ready to go home. To her roots. She was ready to go home. 18. Thanksgiving.
When Lou stepped through the front door of her parents' house in Thunderbolt, everything was just the same. The coat rack in the foyer still looked like it was about to topple under the weight of too many jackets. The smell of dryer sheets and pledge still made the house feel cleaner than it was. The floral couch in the living room was faded from the morning sun that fell through the blinds. A stack of tea-stained Southern decorating magazines covered the coffee table, favorite pages bookmarked with grocery receipts, for the distant time when her parents' dream came true of the mortgages being paid off and their finally having a little extra money for remodeling. Andrew, her mom's hysterical toy poodle, trotted over to sniff the gas and give the back of Luce's ankle a familiar chomp. Luce's dad set down her duffel in the foyer, draping an easy arm around her shoulder. Luce watched their reflection in the narrow entryway mirror, father and daughter. His rimless glasses slipped down on his nose as he kissed the crown of her back-to-black hair. "Welcome home, Lucy," he said. "We missed you round here." Luce closed her eyes.
"I missed you, too." It was the first time in weeks she hadn't lied to her parents. The house was warm and full of intoxicating Thanksgiving scents. She inhaled and could instantly picture every foil-wrapped dish staying hot in the oven. Deep-fried turkey with mushroom stuffing, her dad's specialty. Apple cranberry sauce, light-as-air yeast rolls, and enough pumpkin pecan pies, her mom's, to feed the whole state. She must have been cooking all week. Luce's mom took hold of her wrists. Her hazel eyes were a little damp around the edges. "How are you, Luce?" she asked. "Are you all right?" It was such a relief to be home. Luce could feel her eyes grow damp, too. She nodded, folding into her mom for a hug. Her mother's chin-length dark hair was sculpted and sprayed, like she'd just been to the beauty parlor the day before, which, knowing her, she probably had. She looked younger and prettier than Luce remembered. Compared to the elderly parents she'd tried to visit in Mount Shasta, even compared to Vera, Luce's mom seemed happy and alive, untainted by sorrow. It was because she'd never had to feel what the others had felt, losing a daughter, losing Luce. Her parents had made their whole life around her. It would destroy them if she died. She could not die the way she had in the past. She could not wreck her parents' life this time around, now that she knew more about her past. She would do whatever it took to keep them happy. Her mom gathered the coats and hats of the four other teenagers who were standing in her foyer. "I hope your friends brought their appetites." Shelby jerked her thumb at Miles. "Be careful what you wish for." It was just like Luce's parents not to mind a car full of last-minute guests at their Thanksgiving table. When her dad's Chrysler New Yorker had rolled through Sword and Cross's tall, wrought-iron gates just before noon, Luce had been waiting for him. She hadn't been able to sleep at all the night before. Between the strangeness of being back at Sword and Cross and her nerves about mingling such an odd Thanksgiving crew the next day, her mind would not settle down. Luckily, the morning had passed without incident. After giving her dad the longest, tightest hug she'd ever given someone, she'd mentioned that she had a few friends without places to go for the holiday. 5 minutes later, they were all in the car. Now they were milling around Luce's childhood home, picking up framed pictures of her at different awkward ages, gazing out the same French windows she'd been gazing out over bowls of cereal for more than a decade. It was kind of surreal. As Arian bounded into the kitchen to help her mom whip some cream, Miles peppered her dad with questions about the enormous piece-of-junk telescope in his office. Luce felt a swell of pride in her parents for making everyone feel welcome. The sound of a car horn outside made her jump. She perched on the sagging couch and lifted a slat of the window blind. Outside, a red and white taxi was idling in front of the house, coughing exhaust into the cold fall air. The windows were tinted, but the passenger could be only one person. Callie. One of Callie's knee-high red leather boots extended from the back door, planting itself in the concrete sidewalk. A second later, Luce's best friend's heart-shaped face came into view. Callie's porcelain skin was flushed, her auburn hair shorter, cut at a sleek angle close to her chin. Her pale blue eyes glittered. For some reason, she kept glancing back inside the cab. "Whatcha looking at?" Shelby asked, pulling up another slat so she could see. Roland slid in on Luce's other side and looked out too. Just in time to see Daniel slide out of the taxi, followed by Cam from the front seat. Luce sucked in her breath at the sight of them. Both guys were wearing long, dark coats, like the coats they'd worn on the shore in the scene she'd glimpsed. Their hair gleamed in the sunlight. And for a moment, just a moment, Luce remembered why she'd originally been intrigued by them both at Sword and Cross. They were beautiful. There was no getting around it. Surreally, unnaturally stunning. But what the hell were they doing here?
Right on time, Roland murmured.
On her other side, Shelby asked, Who invited them? My thoughts exactly, Luce said, but she couldn't help swooning a little at the sight of Daniel, even though things between them were a mess.